the Alaska Railroad, running south to Seward. Friday, March 27th, 1964. An ordinary day, until 5:36. And then, the Earth moved. This is the story recreated in part of what happened to Alaska this day and in the 75 hours to follow. Prince William Sound off the Gulf of Alaska. The Chena's already passed this way, an Alaska steamship freighter inbound for Valdez. And in fishing ports from Cordova to Kodiak, the trawlers are tying up for the weekend. It's a long weekend. Today is Good Friday. Sunday's Easter. Monday will be Seward Day, the 97th anniversary of Seward's folly, the purchase of a worthless wilderness for $7 million. There's plenty of wilderness still, but it's hardly worthless. Alaska's on the move, a booming new state.
Revolution Airways, Flight 3 for Cold Bay, St. Paul Island, Cape Sarachev, Dutch Harbor, Driftwood Bay.
Anchorage International Airport is crowded with people coming and going. One of them, Mrs. Carol Brady, who's just been chosen Mrs. Alaska, and the photographers are down to see her off.
Northwest Orient Airlines, flagliner service from Seattle, Tacoma, now arriving.
Others are coming home for the holidays. Among them, Douglas Clure, until 3 weeks ago, the city's civil defense director. But he resigned to enter private business. Now he's just returning from a trip to the lower 48. In downtown Anchorage, the day is nearly over. At 5:30, Mrs. Blanche Clark leaves the office on her last trip of the day, picking up and delivering film for a photographic lab. Her first stop will be a downtown department store. There are still some buyers lingering in the stores for last-minute Easter shopping. Most people are on their way home. School's out. Work is over. Tonight, the little theater group out at Alaska Methodist University will be playing Our Town. Some are at church, attending Good Friday services. At Valdez, the Chena's come in, always a red-letter day in the life of the town. For the men, it means the first payday of spring, working cargo in the hold and down on the dock. For the women, it brings fresh fruit and vegetables to Valdez, the first they've seen since winter set in. And for the kids, it's always a little like Christmas. They flock down to the dock when the ship comes in, knowing the deckhands will greet them with fruit and candy. It's dusk, almost too dark for good photography. But aboard the ship, two of the crewmen, Fred Neumayer and Ernest Nelson, unlimber their 8mm movie cameras, trying to get some pictures of the grinning youngsters and their dogs on the dock below. Then, at 5:36, a dozen miles deep, under the mountains north of Prince William Sound, the earth shivers, begins to move. Suddenly, the whole harbor at Valdez begins to empty, drains almost dry. A subterranean chasm opens directly alongside the ship. Slowly, the Chena starts sinking down into it. Soon, only its masttips can be seen from the top. The dock splinters, goes down with it, while crewmen try frantically to reach the people on it. Out in the Gulf of Alaska, the ocean bottom plunges, then heaves upward a full 50 feet, and a wave starts racing for shore. It tosses the Chena high, smashes it down where the dock had been, then drives it into the heart of town. Fred Neumayer grabs a deck stanchion, holds on for dear life, and keeps his camera running. No one on the dock at Valdez will survive. The longshoremen, the kids, or their dogs. Now the tremor builds, rips like lightning around a 500-mile arc. In Anchorage, at 5:44, the seismic wave hits Seward, exploding the gas tanks, sending people racing for their lives as a wall of fire and water sweeps into town. It strikes Kodiak later. First, a high silent tide. Then a 40-foot monster thundering up the channel, turning town and harbor into a crazy whirlpool of capsized boats and floating buildings. All the clocks have stopped at 5:36. And so has everything else. Alaska's been hit by a natural force equal to 10 million atomic bombs of the size that leveled Hiroshima. The greatest shock to hit this continent within the 20th century. Our town at 5:45. Two people lie dead under the concrete slabs, fallen from this storefront in Anchorage. But a third, Blanche Clark, by some miracle, is still alive inside this crushed car. Already passers-by are trying to free her before more loose slabs come plunging down. Others are rallying too. At 5:47, the first mobile unit of RACES, the Radio Amateur Civil Emergency Service, pulls up in front of the State Civil Defense Office on 5th Avenue.
AL7, DGA, calling any station. This is an emergency. An emergency. Any station on this frequency?
This is AL7, Abel Peter Victor Mobile. Over.
AL7, Fred Lundy, over.
Abel Peter Victor, go to the public safety building. Check the city CD. DRW, you go to Elmendorf. Contact center, try to make contact with the system.
Robert Risley, Alaskan warning officer for National Civil Defense at Elmendorf Air Force Base.
Alaska Warning Center calling all stations, calling all stations. Any of those stations that are on, please come in.
No contact.
This Alaska Warning Center calling all stations.
The quake hasn't knocked out our northern defense. The Commander-in-Chief, Alaska, still retains full control of his air defense forces through alternate communication channels. But for the moment, Risley's own circuits are out. Now darkness has fallen. At Providence Hospital on the edge of town, an emergency generator has kicked in to keep the hospital alive. All the others in Anchorage have lost power, heat, light, and water. In the next 2 hours, Providence will be called on to supply emergency treatment for nearly 300 victims of the quake. Among them, Blanche Clark. Rescuers have finally managed to pry the concrete slabs apart, and a acetylene torch has cut her out of her car. Still alive, in spite of a broken neck and arm, three fractured ribs, and shock. The two military bases at Anchorage, Fort Richardson and Elmendorf Air Force Base, are both hard hit. But as the size of the disaster begins to come clear, Alaska Command alerts military police, medics, signalmen, and engineers, mountain rescue troops. The National Guard, just finishing up 2 weeks of training at Camp Denali, is ready too. And trucks and ambulances begin rolling out toward the city. In the Gopher Hole, the emergency communication center in the basement at State Civil Defense, shortwave operators are picking up first reports from pilots flying over the devastated areas.
Again, we repeat, the entire port facility has just been wiped out. There simply isn't a port there anymore.
The quake has generated sea waves up to 30 to 35 feet at irregular time intervals. Is that correct? 5401 will try and approach. If unable, will return to Kenai.
They're still unable to make contact with the outside world, not even with the capital at Juneau, where Don Lowell, the state civil defense director, is trying desperately to get through. At this moment, the entire civil defense staff in this, the largest state in the Union, consists of exactly six trained professionals, two secretaries. On the local level, Seward, Kodiak, and Valdez each have only one part-time worker. The city of Anchorage has none. No replacement for Doug Clure has been hired. But the man who no longer holds the job is doing it anyway. Already, Clure has made a downtown damage survey for John Alcantara, the governor's aide, and delivered a load of emergency medical supplies to Providence Hospital. Now, in front of state civil defense, he runs into George Chirac, the mayor of Anchorage, is drafted back into duty. The public safety building at 6th and C is one of the few in Anchorage with emergency power. City officials are pouring in now. So is military assistance. Eighteen minutes after the quake, station KFQD has returned to the air on auxiliary diesel power, begun broadcasting emergency messages, and other Anchorage radio stations are joining in.
It is also important that you do not go into the downtown area. You will not be admitted. The downtown area has been blocked off.
The first aid station is being set up at the old First Federal Savings and Loan building at 5th Avenue and A Street. A doctor is needed there as soon as possible.
A coordinator is desperately needed at Providence Hospital.
Driving groups, don't sit out in your car. Get undercover now.
All structural and architectural engineers for the U.S. District of Army Engineers are to report to room 111 at District of Engineers building at Olmendorf.
The area is a major disaster area. They have no heat, no fuel, no power.
At 8:30, in the combat center, Bob Risley begins contact with Don Lowell in Juneau.
How many warning points do you have on right now, Don? Nome, Fairbanks, Bethel, Juneau, Sitka, Ketchikan, and Palmer.
Then he begins relaying the first civilian reports of the disaster to California and Washington.
Roger, warning center out.
Still, no one's been able to get through to some of the missing towns.
Two parties in Valdez. Is that up around there? You're up around the area there where you are?
That's KL7EZ Peter Love is the only station I know of in Valdez. I don't know if he got his gear out in time.
Darrell, I presume you can hear me. Is there any indication or sign of fire at Seward?
We received this report through the city manager here in Anchorage that both the oil tanks and docks are on fire at Seward.
In Resurrection Bay, the oil-soaked pilings are floating like candles in the night. And roaring oil tanks light up the sky at Whittier and Valdez. In Valdez Harbor, the Chena rides at anchor at the end of an incredible journey. Three times bounced off the bottom of the bay, driven into town and out again. And yet, through luck and seamanship, still alive, afloat. And in the Pacific, the seismic sea waves are running, smashing at the shores. In Hawaii and all along the West Coast, civil defense workers and state troopers are spreading the warning. But on a beach in Oregon, four children are swept away. At midnight, a tidal bore hits Crescent City, California, and another dozen people are dead. But all through the night, the crests keep hitting Alaska hardest. And so does the earth itself.
15 more messages here. We're getting another earthquake. We're getting another real shaker. This old car is a bouncing around like a ham on a hook gear. This is bouncing around.
There'll be four major aftershocks during the night and a dozen minor tremors. But mountain rescue troops and civilian volunteers keep moving in darkness through the dangerous ruins, searching for dead and injured.
Reporting that an elderly lady, would somebody in that neighborhood please check her home for safety?
Michael Basket, who's 7 years old, can't find him.
Police reported a high voltage power line is down on Northern Lights Boulevard.
It's the Colonel's wife. Homes and services down there.
Stay off the beaches, stay out of the low areas.
The owner, R.W. Fisher, have lost their children. They can't find them. Their home went off the block.
We have more military personnel arriving here at 6 and C, Jim. There have been four or five busloads.
The long night
and also
goes
some
on.
Trucks with heavy equipment coming in.
Over at Salvation Army, more coffee needed at the public safety building.
The people need it. For many, there'll be no sleep tonight or for 72 hours to come.
But we do want to remind these key personnel to report at the public safety building. It is at this
at 3 in the morning, they come down the
plans
stairs.
Will be made for the operation.
The city manager, the mayor, Lieutenant General Raymond Reeves, Commander-in-Chief of Alaska Command, controlling all military forces on this frontier. Representatives of the utility companies and other key civic leaders. They meet in a darkened basement room to set the essential priorities for tomorrow, which things will have to be done first to put the shaken city back on its feet. Some problems can't even wait till tomorrow.
Anybody that right now that doesn't have a place to stay, if they will contact the fire station immediately, we have places at the armory, we have places at the National Guard hangar, we have places at the Carpenter's Hall.
We suggest you bring blankets along with linens, extra food, and first aid kits.
Tyler, we're wondering up here at KENI Studios about the number of people that are being housed now in the emergency shelters. Does anyone have a figure on that?
I don't know, Nat. I have no idea. I'm just terrified.
I've been told by members of the civil defense that tomorrow the teams will go out and evaluate what has happened. That is, to buildings, to homes. We don't know right now how many people have been killed in this thing.
No one can know. The darkness hides it all. Only daylight can bring the answer. At dawn Saturday, Governor William Egan arrives in Anchorage to take charge of relief and rescue operations. He brings Don Lowell and other key officials with him, sets up his command post at State Civil Defense. Overnight, the organization's mushroomed from just six people to nearly 150. The building's too small to hold them. Four huge house trailers are brought in for the overflow. And the Army moves in emergency communications. No one really knows yet what has to be faced. But the helicopters have been taking off since dawn. And now, in the cold gray light of Saturday morning, Alaska learns the answer. The Alaska Railroad. Seward. It looked like this the morning after.
I could see Seward in just a mass of flames, and I just wondered at first if the world hadn't come to an end. and I saw this huge wave. It was water, lumber, and debris just coming down like it was just going to engulf me.
And then there was a monstrous roar, and I looked up, and miles of beaches had just caved in like an elevator had gone down. It was fantastic. I can't really describe it.
Seward, after shock and fire and six tidal waves. To the west, Kodiak Harbor. In the morning of Kodiak, they remember it this way.
It got dark, and suddenly, here comes this first bore.
And then the whole thing went, of course, right through that channel.
And boats and houses and stuff were just sweeping down there. It looked to be about 50 miles an hour.
Four or five boats running in a bunch, and you'd see them just going out the channel for all they were worth, and a few minutes later, here they'd come back again. You'd see one running backwards and one running forward, and all they were trying to do was keep from hitting each other.
My boat kept getting hit by debris in the backwash. I didn't mind the little stuff, but then I got hit by the Standard Oil building. Lousy thing, she cracked my bow.
Kodiak. Home port for 100 fishing vessels. Now more than half lie stranded or awash. No trace of the other 40 will ever be found. Anchorage. Turnagain by the Sea, the fashionable suburb just southwest of town. Built on a bluff overlooking Cook Inlet, on top of a bed of greasy blue clay. The quakes turned it into quivering jelly. The whole shoreline's collapsed out toward the bay. Some houses have traveled 1,200 feet, strewing their wreckage behind them. The fault runs into the city toward the heart of town. Fourth Avenue in the downtown business district. One whole side of the street has dropped from 10 to 30 feet. A modern department store opened less than a year ago. Here, Blanche Clark was trapped in her car. A new hotel. They say it swayed a dozen feet at the top. But still, it survived. The Four Seasons didn't. A luxury apartment building still under construction. Luckily, no casualties here. The workers had knocked off only half an hour before the quake. The first tenants were to move in next month. The toll mounts. Whittier, 11 dead. Cordova, Seldovia, badly damaged. And Valdez? Valdez. This is the pier where the Chena was moored.
I took a look towards the dock, and all I could see down there was the ship up in the air, and then down, and then back up again.
Like a three-story building up above the dock. And then she came down, and when she rolled back the other way, they saw her complete bottom.
Oh, I saw maybe a dozen people turn and break for the beach. And they hadn't the littlest chance. My eyes can't seem to get rid of it.
Alaska, the morning after. Already help's on the way. General Reeves has promised full support from all elements of his Alaskan command. And General Ned Moore of U.S. Army Alaska is airlifting rescue forces into Valdez and Seward. One relief column is battering its way down the wrecked highway toward Portage. Another is rolling into Anchorage. On Kodiak Island, headquarters for the Alaska Sea Frontier, the naval base lies half-flooded by tidal wave action. But still, more than 1,000 men are detailed to help in civilian rescue operations. There's been no looting, and there'll be no martial law. The military's there, but only to help. And all of it will be channeled through civilian authority. In downtown Anchorage, rescue teams and engineers are still searching the ruins for victims, checking off the unsafe buildings as they go.
It is also important that you do not go into the downtown area. You will not be admitted. The downtown area has been blocked off, and police will issue summonses if that is indicated. No one, we repeat, no one will be allowed to enter any building bearing a red sign of condemnation.
At the public safety building, still some confusion. Nearly 200 would-be volunteers milling around, waiting to be told what to do. Some finally grab armbands, just take off on their own. Doug Clure finds it impossible to spare much time for them now. He's got more urgent matters in mind.
A special announcement from Anchorage Civil Defense Office, a firm directive of no smoking near any water area is in effect at this time. The inlet is now covered with a layer of gasoline.
One spark and the whole harbor could go up like Seward. But Doug Clure digs up some surplus hose. The Coast Guard and firemen begin flushing the gasoline away. Another hazard, leaking gas mains shattered by the quake, and a house explodes.
Back with the camera. Back down.
Down on the sidewalk now. Let's go. You're not going to get any trouble. Come on.
Let's take him out.
Take him
out
of here.
Right.
Let's go.
Take him out
of here.
Another victim claimed by the quake. Water and sanitation problems are even more serious.
Please stop using your sewers between 3rd and 9th Avenues from Gamble to L Street. The poor fellows down there are getting swamped. All water is to be boiled or treated before use. It may be treated by adding to 5 gallons of water, 1 teaspoon of chlorine.
If you use snow, don't merely melt it, but boil it, and then add 1 teaspoon.
Already, Army water tanks from Fort Richardson are fanning out through the town to relieve the serious water shortage.
And if anyone needs any water, to bring their buckets down there and fill them up. It's on the house.
Army field kitchens are filling another gap. There's no gas or electricity for cooking, so field units are there to feed the hungry, the homeless, the hundreds of volunteer rescue workers. In Anchorage alone, they'll serve 55,000 meals this weekend. Now, 100 other relief operations are underway, civilian, military, governmental. And under the governor's direction, the staff at State Civil Defense has the complicated task of coordinating them all, working out the logistics of supply, then relaying requirements through the Mars military stations at Richardson and Elmendorf. Needed, typhoid serum, water and sewer pipe, sanitation equipment, food, clothing, auxiliary generators, a gas leak detector, 1,000 other urgent needs. 2,000 miles south, the first planes already are beginning to load up. The White House has alerted all departments of the government, all branches of the military, to stand ready for maximum assistance. At Point Magoo in California, a battalion of Seabees emplanes for Kodiak Naval Station. At McCord Air Force Base in Washington, an Army field hospital unit takes off for Anchorage. Shelter supplies will come from Seattle, food and clothing from a half a dozen states, the gas leak detector from Texas. Anchorage International Airport. The control tower is down. 1 million gallons of jet fuel spilled near the runway. Incoming planes must land at Elmendorf Air Force Base. One of the first ones in, Air Force One. The president's been awakened twice in the night for early bulletins on the emergency. And at dawn, he's officially declared Alaska a major disaster area. Lent his personal plane to Senators Greening and Bartlett. House Representative Rivers on the West Coast when the disaster struck will be coming in on a separate flight. With the two senators, Edward McDermott, the director of the Office of Emergency Planning, responsible for coordinating all federal assistance in natural disasters. Their assignment? To tour the stricken areas, make a first-hand survey of the damage, then fly directly back to Washington to make a personal report to the president. Victims from the outlying areas begin to pour in. Some of the injured are airlifted down to Seattle. Others into Anchorage and Providence Hospital. Jack King of Valdez, one of the men aboard the Chena when the wave tossed it into town. A longshoreman working deep in the hold, trapped and crushed under shifting cargo. Now he's barely breathing, and both of his feet are gone. But still an uncommon man. Feet or no feet, he's sworn he'll walk down the street in Valdez again and do it under his own power. Now the problems to keep him alive. Huge areas in the quake zone are still unheard from, and the Civil Air Patrol swings into action.
Rescue teams, please don't forget about 12 people at the Fort Ellsworth airstrip on Lake Clark. Estimated 175 miles southwest of Anchorage, that message is signed Basil Hansen.
In the next 10 days, the volunteer pilots of the CAP will fly search and rescue missions equal to 3.5 trips around the world. The military effort will be even larger. 50,000 square miles have been shattered by the quake. And now, Air Force, Army, and Navy are joining the Coast Guard and civilians in covering every inch. Surveying damage, dropping supplies, seeking survivors isolated back in the bush and along the tide-wrecked coast. Whole villages have disappeared. Chenega, off Prince William Sound. The beach looks like a logged over forest, but the stumps are foundation pilings for houses no longer there. 23 people died here, 13 of them children. The only building left, the schoolhouse, 90 feet high on the hill. And spray from the seismic waves even reached there. On Saturday night at Kodiak Naval Base, the refugees begin to come in. The native fishing villages at Old Harbor, Kaguyak, Afognak, Uzinki, have all been swept away. Two fishing vessels have picked the natives up and finally brought them to safety. They're still stunned, unable to talk.
What is your name, sir? What happened to Kaguyak?
No words left. But now, at last, there's food and clothing, and finally a warm place to sleep.
Little suit.
You haven't got any pants, but you, boy, have we? You got a jacket? There, that ought to keep you good and warm. There you go.
Easter Sunday. The earth's still shaking. There have been a score of tremors since the big one. Some sharp, some small, but all enough to keep people on edge.
No Don't get shook up, as I say. If you see the Chandler is moving a little bit, just stick around. If you see the building start shaking, then take off. But let me be the quarterback and let me call the shots. Take it easy. Watch yourselves. Don't do anything rash. And above all, remember all those who are in need. If any of you need any help, I have quite a few telephone numbers with people who are willing to give shelter, who are willing to give food. If any of you need any help, please stop by and see me, and we'll get you back on the road. And may Almighty God, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
The second day. Time to begin picking up the pieces, the small pieces of people's lives. In some cases, all that's left. At Turnagain by the sea, the postman's still delivering the mail. But 150 addresses aren't there.
And I don't believe all the bombers of World War II could have done this much damage. Some of the people thought an atomic bomb had gone off at the time.
People's values have changed considerably. A home has no value, a car has no value. The main thing is what you have left. If you have your wife and your family, you're rich.
I can't believe all that.
Most people here had taken one look and given up everything for lost. But now volunteer rescue teams have stepped in to save everything that can be packed out. More important than cleanup, the question of health. Civil Defense has arranged for emergency supplies of typhoid serum to be flown in to stave off the threat of epidemic. And in Seward, Anchorage, Kodiak, Valdez, the people and the children line up. The long distance lines, the telegraph wires, the short wave sets, they're all swamped with messages from in and out of the earthquake zone and all the other 49 states. People anxiously trying to find out what's happened to missing relatives and friends.
Jim and Elizabeth Johnson, would you please come to the Anchorage Hospital, the ANS Hospital?
My nephew, Lieutenant Mike Clark, and wife are okay if possible. I don't know if this is possible or not, but they are in Anchorage. He is connected with Fort Richardson.
Japanese airline people are safe, and they are...
Now, toward the end of the second day, the planes start streaming in from the lower 48, bringing food, supplies, water, and irrigation pipe, 100 kinds of equipment. The biggest load, a 330,000-pound Bailey Bridge for the engineers to restore the highway to Kenai. Before this huge airlift's over, Air Force, MATS, and other military planes will bring in more than 1.5 million pounds of supplies. And the effort will go on day and night for the next 2 weeks, until the emergency's over. All federal assistance is being channeled through the state authorities, and Governor Egan has appointed Don Lowell as his official coordinator, responsible for funneling the aid wherever it's needed most. And so on Fifth Avenue, they're heading into their third straight sleepless night. Monday, Seward Day. The 97th anniversary of the Alaskan Purchase. The week when the town of Seward had planned to celebrate a brand new honor, its selection as an All-America city. Now, instead, every able-bodied man is drafted to clean up the mess. The same in Anchorage.
Once again, we would like to call for laborers with shovels. Report to the public safety building and register, and then you will be...
In the ruined areas along 4th and 5th, all buildings have been red flagged since Saturday morning. Too dangerous to enter. The ground still slipping. But now, merchants have permission to try to retrieve their stocks, and volunteer helpers pitch in. The third day since the quake. The initial shocks had time to wear off, and now the reaction sets in. Some show it with signs. Others put it in words.
I was talking on the phone, and then the thing started. And he said, "Hey, we got a little earthquake." And I said, "Yeah, yeah." And we talked for a little time, and then we both said, "Whoop, see ya."
We're used to the shakes, but when the warm champagne started to explode, we went out the doors. And I mean all the doors.
You know, my odd sense of humor, when I got home, two houses from my house, there was a neighbor of ours. And she was really, really shaken to the roots. And of course, we all were. But I thought, well, there's no point in being ultra serious about all this. And when I drove up trying to get home, I said, "So what's new?" And I lost a friend.
Alaskans will need their sense of humor, their sense of courage, too. Especially people like Blanche Clark, remembering the moments inside that crushed car.
Miss Clark, how long was it then before hell came?
Well, it didn't seem very long. A lady and a couple of children went by, and they said, "I wonder if there's anyone in that car." And I called out because I wanted them to know that I was there. And they said that they were sure that help would be right along.
You seem in pretty good spirits. How do you feel toward the future now?
Oh, you can't keep Alaskans down.
Loss of life's been miraculously low. In the final count, only 115 dead or missing. But the damage suffered is something else.
That if somebody spits over here, the whole damn thing will collapse. What we should do, if somebody's got enough guts, I might even have the guts once in a while, too. I'm an idiot by nature. Tie on it to a few of these posts and let's get a few cats 200 feet away and pull it down.
Alaskans have risen superbly to their crisis. State and local authorities and civil defense, all the civic groups, Red Cross, Salvation Army, and thousands of volunteers. But in one sense, Alaska's been lucky. As the state closest to possible enemy attack, it's heavily garrisoned, and the Alaskan command has poured in military manpower and equipment unstintingly to help pull it through this crisis. But the loss, too staggering for any state to bear alone. Now the national government will have to take a hand. Alaska needs help, and it'll get it. In the time ahead, federal assistance in one form or another will run to more than $350 million. But inevitably, the bigger part of the job ahead must be done by Alaskans themselves. And so, on Monday evening, a weary governor speaks to his people.
We have lived through the staggering events of the past 75 hours. Now it is time to take a good, hard look at the future and what is being accomplished to restore our communities and our lives.
Time to begin again. For Blanche Clark, it'll take 3 months to leave this hospital bed. For Jack King of Valdez, still longer. It'll be Labor Day, 5 months away, before he'll finally walk out on brand new feet, the last victim of the quake to leave Providence Hospital. But ready at last for what he's sworn to do, to walk down the street in Valdez again and do it under his own power. In Chinega and the other native villages, they'll mourn the lost, and then start thinking of life again.
God is our hope and our strength. Therefore we will not fear, though the earth be moved, and though the hills be carried into the midst of the sea.
75 hours. 3 endless days of crisis are over. The long, long work of recovery still stretches ahead. But the rebuilding can begin tomorrow. Now it's time for a little sleep.